With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, my name is Stuart Miles and welcome to the Apocalypse Podcast. This week, Apocalypse's Rick Henderson is here to talk all things Sony PlayStation 5 following the big games reveal last week. And with the news that Bose is pulling out of the augmented reality market and the worry of industry unicorn Magic Leap's imminent downfall, it's fitting that I recently interviewed BAFTA Games Committee member Andrew Illia about the future of AR and AR glasses and what's in store for the future. And if that wasn't enough to excite, Cam Bunton joins us to tell us how he's been getting on with the latest smart Casio G-Shock watch. Can it deliver a modern approach without forgetting its heritage? Stay tuned to find out. But first, back to you, Rick. What's new with the PS5?
Well, we actually got to not only see a whole selection of games at a Future of Gaming event that was previously delayed, but we finally got it. But more excitingly is that we also got to see the PlayStation 5, and it looks like a stormtrooper who's had his head squished.
We've had a chance now to sort of process the information that we came out. And I think one of the questions I have is just how big is the new PlayStation 5?
It looks mammoth. Now, when the design was first revealed, people held it up against the Xbox Series X, which essentially the Xbox Series X looks like a box of Black Magic chocolates. It's just
It looks to me like a fridge.
Yeah, it's just a lump, basically. but a lump with a purpose, you know, it's to dissipate the heat out the top. The PlayStation 5, on the other hand, is a beautifully crafted and well-designed looking thing. However, when people actually looked into it further, that we don't have specifications, for example, on the measurements and the weight of it. But when people looked into the size of the disc tray, now a disc tray will always be the same size because it has to hold a disc. And when people looked at the slot, they then resized it in Photoshop to compare against other games consoles of the past. And it is huge. It is easily the largest games console that anybody has ever released. It is, I would say, almost twice as big on its end as the PlayStation 2, for example.
That's crazy.
It's a mammoth machine. I'm not even sure how I would fit it under the telly.
I was about to say, presumably, normally when you see these things, they are made to fit traditional TV stands. And I know that all the imagery that they've shown so far has mainly been standing up. As some people would say, like a router with white pieces of A4 paper around it. But I have seen them. I have seen some images of it lying down, although they're pretty scarce. Presumably, it will still fit in your TV cabinet.
Just. I was kind of looking at my own. Most TV cabinets have a fairly wide shelf. If you have an Xbox One X or a PlayStation 4, then you have it lying down inside a TV cabinet, there will be space either side. So you could probably fit your PS5 in. Just the problem I have with that is that heat is going to be an issue, real issue, because obviously you need space, good space, either side to allow air to flow. If you don't have space either side, air won't flow correctly, and we're talking about a machine that will get very, very hot. It's got graphics processing in it that will get hot. So I do worry about that. And as my PS4 Pro already sounds like a helicopter taking off, then it could be an issue.
So just a final word. It is much, much taller, wider, whatever, than the current PS4 or the Xbox One.
Yeah, easily. But it has, and you can tell that it's obviously been designed to stand on its end more than actually go into a cabinet, similarly to the Xbox Series X. Now, what we originally were concerned about, and our concerns have become reality, were that the spec of both of these new machines would mean that they are the equivalent of a tower PC. Well, now we know they are tower PCs.
Wow.
Yeah, so if you are thinking of upgrading to a next-gen machine, you also have to think about where you're going to put it.
Yeah, okay, so that's the main kind of hardware reveal that we felt, because we obviously knew about the controller, we knew about all the, really, about the inner specs. They haven't really kind of detailed anything further on that, have they? So now that we've got this power machine, this monster that's going to sit next to your TV somewhere in your living room on a podium where you just have a spotlight on it, we obviously saw some of the games.
Yeah, and this is you know, it's worth finding a space to put it, because the games look utterly stunning. My particular favourite on the night, funny enough, was probably not the same as most people's. Mine was Ratchet and Clank, but that looked incredible. The ray tracing is a technology that allows developers to use light in a more natural way. You basically say, here's the light source, and suddenly ray tracing does the magic for you, and it suddenly looks like the light is perfect. Now, this allows for things like shadows and reflections to be more natural, and my lord, this is really properly going to affect gaming going forward. My only concern, and there are other games, I mean, Gran Turismo 7, all of these games look stunning. And if you go onto YouTube, you can find the trailers for all. In fact, go onto Pocket Link, you can find all the trailers. But the games look so stunning. The problem I have going forward is that they'll look so good, you won't know whether they're bad or not.
Right. And how do you, I mean, I think the ones that I thought was interesting, you know, it was kind of the new Spider-Man movie, which had some complication over whether it was going to be a remake or on its own thing, something else entirely. You know, the graphics do look amazing. Do you think that will be? Will it suffer from that same fate that sometimes the first iteration of next generation console games have, which is they focus so much on the graphics that the gameplay is just a bit
Well, Spider-Man, they opened with Spider-Man Miles Morales, which features the black character Miles Morales as Spider-Man. If you follow the comic books, he became Spider-Man in Ultimate Spider-Man many
and he's
years
also
ago.
The character of Spider-Verse, isn't he?
That superb film.
Spider-Verse is an amazing film.
Incredible film. Well, he is going to take the center stage in it. But what we found subsequent to the event was it's actually just a DLC add-on. It's an expansion. So the PlayStation 5 version is actually Spider-Man, the game, Marvel's Spider-Man, which came out on the PS4 last year. Enhanced and updated, plus this add-on. What we don't know yet is whether or not Sony will also release the add-on for the PS4 version, because there will be quite a few people that won't be able to afford a PS5, which I'm sure we'll come to in a second. But,
I was going to say, and that leads me to the second question, which is about backwards compatibility. Xbox has really gone out quite early on and said pretty much every game will work on the new Xbox Series X, won't it? What's the case with the PS5 and backwards compatibility there?
There will be some backwards compatibility, although PlayStation's only word on the subject matter at the moment is that at least 100 PS4 games will be compatible with the PS5 at launch. But they're working towards getting everything backwards compatible, or at least everything that's worth making backwards compatible. That's quite a stark difference to the Xbox Series X, where every single Xbox One game, every single game you can play on your Xbox One will work on the Xbox Series X. Plus, Xbox also has the benefit of Xbox Smart Delivery, which allows you to buy Xbox One games, and if there is an enhancement somewhere down the line, you can just download the enhancement for Xbox Series X when you have one.
Right.
So, and that's for free, so you don't have to pay any more for the same game. Doesn't seem the same with PlayStation 5 at present. That might be something they still announce. It's still a long time to go.
And that's my final question, is how long have we got to wait? And how much is it going to cost?
It comes out in holiday 2020. There are two versions of the PS5. That was actually a bit of a surprise. There's the disc-based version, and there's one, the digital edition, which doesn't have a disc drive, which makes a lot of sense, to be honest, and we believe that that's to offer a cheaper version. Now, we're not sure. There's been numerous leaks on the price. We're not sure right now of exactly how much it will cost. Some leaks say it'll be £599 for the disc version, which for me, that will place the digital edition under £500. Some leaks have actually said that it's even slightly cheaper and that £500 is roughly the price of the disc version. So you might be able to get one for £399. But we'll see. We'll see on that. I'm hoping it's obviously the latter, but I actually think it will be £599 for the disc version and £499 for the digital edition.
That makes sense, doesn't it? I don't think you can get to Tau PC prices just yet of like £1,000 for a games console, but
yeah, you know. Absolutely, and it actually matches previous PlayStation console releases if you take inflation into account. For example, the PlayStation 3, when it first launched, it was a staggering £700 if you took into account inflation. So, it matches a PlayStation release strategy for me.
Still to come, Cam gives us his verdict on the Casio G-Shock GBD H1000 smartwatch.
I think the niche is, like we said at the beginning, that niche and the place it fits is within that community of people who really, really love G-Shock watches.
Having worked in the augmented reality industry for over a decade, the MD of Arishi, Andrew Elia, and his team are well placed to understand the potential AR has and what it can deliver. Over the years, the company has developed AR apps for Hugo Boss, Marks and Spencer's, Johnson & Johnson, and even rock gods Led Zeppelin. But with AR struggling at the moment, with Bose cancelling its augmented reality plans and Magic Leap seemingly laying off thousands of staff, is there any hope for the industry? And what about Apple? Could the company, who's been rumoured to be working on a pair of AR glasses for some time, come to the rescue of the industry? I started by asking Andrew to give a quick overview of where he sees AR, VR and even MR in the market today.
So we were actually the first in the UK to put AR solutions together back in 2008 when not many people even knew what it was. So briefly, the distinction between them is that AR takes CGI imagery and it overlays it onto live video feed. But it does a little bit more than that because what it's actually doing is hooking into real world items. So you might have seen many years ago things where people have something that looks a bit like a QR code and you can put your phone in front of it and something, you know, pops up from it. Effectively, AR is the union between a tracking or so-called markerless tracking and combining CG images so that if you had, you know, aforementioned QR code type thing and you move it around, the 3D object moves with it and it looks like it's sitting on top of the page. So that's where it mixes those two worlds together. Whereas in something like VR, the entire world is virtual and you don't get any sort of peeps into the real world through that process. And MR really is kind of more in aligned to augmented reality in that it's trying to combine both, but very often it's with glasses or that sort of thing, which hopefully is a topical thing to say.
Yeah, now obviously at the moment we see, you know, there's a number of applications on AR. Apple are pushing AR through ARKit, Google and stuff like that. It feels that we're working towards something bigger. Something that's not necessarily involves you just using your phone or your tablet. Do you perceive that you know, there's obviously rumors of glasses and stuff. Do you think they will become a reality?
Very much so, actually. So you may or may not be familiar with the fact that ARKit came from Apple's acquisition of a German company called Mateo several years ago. And we actually used to do a lot of work with them. So we did some work for Marks & Spencer, the first AR-enabled greetings card, in fact, several years ago. And very innovative company, very clever people. And consequently, they caught Apple's eye. Now, Apple kept them in a bunker for a few years. And then when they broke cover and said, ta-da, here's ARKit, that that's all of the brains that were part of Matteo's original proposition. Now, at the time when we were working with them, they were already doing proofs of concept. And in fact, some of the videos are still on YouTube of things with teaching automotive engineers how to replace parts in a car. So there's a BMW one that's on there. And there were a few companies even back then who were developing these sort of glasses for commercial use. So there's a company called Vuzix, who, in fact, you can see they have all these things on their website now for commercial applications. And even Epson, the people who we all know for printers, were doing that same sort of thing. So I don't think it's a huge quantum leap that this would have been on Apple's radar for a while, because I'm sure that was one of the things that they could see coming along. And it is really the next logical step, because something where you're talking about training aids and generally making an experience a lot more seamless than you know, waving your mobile phone at something, and that, you know, that's bound to be where it comes in next. And actually, if you rewind it back to 2008, before people were even using smartphones for this, they were sticking things in front of their webcam. So if you look at that evolution, glasses are the next logical step, really.
Now, we started to see some of that evolution, as you say, with glasses, with things like Microsoft HoloLens, and with Magic Leap, who seems to be a company that is brilliant at raising money, but never actually producing anything. Yeah. Do you foresee both of those entities, both of those businesses have gone very much for the business market? You know, I remember demoing Microsoft HoloLens 2 when it launched, and I was kind of asked to put together a cable. I was told to put together a cable in an aircraft wing, or, you know, something along those lines. Do you perceive that if Apple got into this market, that it would perhaps be more focused towards the consumer? And if so, you know, how would that work? And how do you see, what kind of applications do you see being useful rather than just an engineer trying to fix a car tire or something?
Yeah, I think it's easy to jump to that conclusion that it's entirely for business, because there's a very logical use case for that. And the same kind of goes for AR as well, to a point. But I wouldn't rule it out on being a completely consumer development in the future, because all it's missing is that killer app. If we talk about virtual reality headsets, to a degree, it's always been a bit of a novelty for people. And here's something we record in 360, and here's a few token games and that sort of thing. Obviously, that's now evolved. But the thing that's focused a lot of people's attention is with some of these games that you can get for the Oculus Quest. People have seen a very evident reason why someone would want to go for something so they can play those particular games. And so I think at some point people will say, well, yeah, that obviously we want to, you know, play, you know, whatever, mixed reality chess or something like that. There will be some kind of use case that will come up for B2C audiences once people have got their hands on it, just as it has for VR and AR, and it will happen. It's just that it hasn't happened yet.
Now, as your experience as a developer and developing for a number of companies and being involved in this realm, what do you think the killer apps will be that we'll start to use from a consumer point of view on a devices like an Apple Glass?
Education is probably the first thing that people are going to look at. There's already some really nice tuition things which are mainly for VR at the moment. So you can see that taking the leap across to something like this. And particularly with our current COVID situation and the fact that we all have kids homeschooling and trying to get them to stay on their seat is hard enough. Something that can give them a little bit more engagement, I think, is going to be a big step forward. And I think that will unlock a lot of other ideas. But I think it will be between that and gaming that will really make it rocket. But it has to be pitched in a way that makes it attractive for developers, that you can get these ideas flowing out, and it has to be at a price point that makes it palatable for people.
Now, one of the things that, you know, covering technology at Apocalypse over the years, we've seen things come and go and the promise of success and failure in other places. We've seen, you know, with VR, it's been from the initial inception of what seems like decades ago, but the latest bout from a couple of years ago, kind of there is some momentum, but it's been very slow to get into the homes. You see people excited by the demos and what's possible, but you don't really hear of many people actually owning a VR headset in their house. Do you think the same fate will happen to AR, or do you believe that there is some, you know, that this is going to be different this time around?
Well, it has actually happened to AR a couple of times. So back in 2008 when we did it, and you know, this was a completely new world for people. And the company we were working with at the time, a French company called Total Immersion, obviously that was their choice of translation. We did an awful lot of projects for them for various brands, Hugo Boss and Nokia and goodness knows who else. And I could see the way that these solutions have been sold was very much a sort of wham bam, flash in the pan, here's a big pizzazz, but nothing that actually gave it a sort of longevity. So our vision was that it could be a great way of bridging a print and digital. So being able to use it to activate, you know, a back page ad in a magazine or something like that, so that we could kind of keep print and some value for it. But because companies like TI were basically pushing it as a very much, you know, one hit and to be fair, quite an expensive hit to the agencies and the brands, it died a death, because the next time they went back and said, oh, well, let's do another AR campaign, they'd say, well, you know, we've done that before, we've spent a load of money, you know, we only got a limited amount of engagement. So that's what killed it in the first instance. So it was really priced out and burnt out. The second time was arguably when Apple came in with ARKit the first time, and we got our Pokemon Go's and things like that. But again, you know, there wasn't really anything that was a sustainable use of AR. And until we see that sustainable use, then we're going to keep having these, oh, it's really exciting, and then all of a sudden it goes again. So And VR has kind of tracked the same sort of thing, except VR has been going on a lot longer because you haven't had the same requirements for device horsepower as AR has. Because AR is quite computationally expensive because you're doing this detection and tracking at the same time as rendering the CGI content as well. Whereas VR, you're kind of in control of the entire environment. So VR, I think the evolution of it is probably a little bit more interesting, in that there is a capital expenditure, in that, you know, you have to invest in the hardware and getting units out there, and then that there's a price point to whether it's palatable to end customers and to businesses. And Google Cardboard has been fantastic for, you know, opening people's eyes as to what's possible. And it could be argued that that's what's led to the development of, you know, all these devices from, you know, Oculus, Samsung, HTC, and so forth. Yeah, we again, it all is down to what applications will make these things worthwhile.
And so, do you think, sort of wrapping it up, do you think that Apple is working on an AR glasses that is capable of doing that, and we will see that, and if so, when?
Right, so almost certainly they will be working on one. Whether it's one that they're going to engineer in-house, or whether there's going to be an acquisition or some kind of OEM. I mean, Apple technically don't do OEMs that much. I would say either there's something internally or there's an acquisition in the offing. And in terms of when we're going to see it, well, I think things are obviously going to be a bit slowed down this year, engineering-wise, but I wouldn't be surprised if sometime next year we see something appear on the market. All the technology is in place, the software, the expertise is all there in-house. It's just when they feel it's market-ready, really.
For a G-Shock fan or collector, nothing comes close to the chunky, durable, digital Casio watches. I've had a Mudman in my past and loved it to bits. So how do you make sure that the beloved classic stays relevant in a world of always connected mentality and smartwatches? Well, that's supposedly where the GBD H1000 Casio G-Shock watch comes in. It promises to automatically track runs, plot your route, and read your heart rate without losing anything that also makes it a traditional G-Shock watch that we also love. So can it deliver a modern approach without forgetting its heritage? Pocketlint's Cam Bunton is here to give us his verdict. So Cam, what do you think?
I mean, it's pretty cool, isn't it? It's like, it's for a G-Shock owner, collector, lover, it's one of those things where you get to have everything that makes a G-Shock a G-Shock, but then you get the added benefit of being able to go out and track your runs and see a map and do your heart rate and just regular daily steps and activities. It's a pretty good compromise, because it's not your full smartwatch, but it's not missing loads, although obviously it does miss a few features.
So let's just start back at the beginning. For people that are aware of G-Shock, they're obviously nice, big, bulky. They're very iconic in their design. There's hundreds of designs. Does it keep that appeal? Is there anything that's been lost in that process by it becoming smart?
No, not that I can see. I mean, it still has that digital monochrome LCD reflective panel. It still has, you know, the backlight that's just blue, two blue little LEDs on one side of the screen that lights it up. You can either set that to come automatically when you raise your wrist or press the light button. It's got loads of buttons around the outside with labels telling you what all the buttons do and what their secondary functions are. So when you look at it and when you're looking at the time and looking at the actual design of the watch, it still very much looks like and feels like a digital watch and a G-Shock one.
Now, this is mainly focused towards the way we've spoken about this is mainly focused towards using it for running and things like that. Does it have any other smart functionalities? Can you get your messages on there, for example?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty basic. If you remember back to like the very first smartwatches like Pebble, where you can just read your notifications on the screen. So you get a bleep, like a classic digital watch bleeps, and then you get a little pop-up notification on the digital screen and you can read the message. But unlike Apple Watch and Wear OS, you can't reply or interact with the notification. You can just read it. So you can see, basically, you see if it's important, and if you want to read it properly and reply, then obviously you need to pick your phone up and do it that way.
Now, is there anything that you didn't like or felt that it needed more of?
I mean, if it's going to compete with the likes of Garmin and Apple Watch, it needs more tracking modes, because as it stands, it really is just a running watch. You set it to go running and then you can run, but you can't set things like weightlifting workouts. You can't do like HIIT or biking or indoor cycling or anything like that. It's just running. So if that's all you do, then you're going to love it, because a lot of traditional runners would prefer to use a digital watch anyway, because that's what they're used to. But that's really all it does in that regard.
And how do you think it compares to, you know, who's going to buy this? And how do you think it compares to sort of a more, you know, a Polar or a Garmin or something along those lines?
I mean, in terms of like accuracy, it compares really well. I compared it with a few different watches that I've tested over the last few months, and it seems to track heart rate and distance and cadence just as well as any of them. But the one thing that you will get on the Casio that you don't get on any of the others is ridiculously long battery life. It's got solar power. So Casio says if you leave it in the sun for 2 hours a week, that's going to give you enough charge to keep the watch going basically forever, as long as you don't do too long of running sessions here and there. But I didn't manage to drain the battery once, not even close. But you can, I mean, you can plug it in if you want to, but the battery just goes on and on and on and on. It's crazy. But then you kind of expect that from a digital watch, I guess. It's a long lasting battery.
Yeah. And so from a point of view of who's it aimed at, where does this kick in? Because it obviously, you know, there's lots of challenges out there. There's obviously Apple Watch, which does a lot more. There's all the Wear OS stuff, which obviously, you know, for Android users, that gives you kind of a lot of functionality. And then you've got the very good Garmin running watches, Fitbit. I mean, it's a very crowded market.
It is. And I think the niche is, like we said at the beginning, that niche and the place it fits is within that community of people who really, really love G-Shock watches. Or maybe runners who are a bit more traditionalist and have always used the digital watch and don't want to move to a smartwatch. You still get everything that makes it a digital watch, except you have this added capability of being able to track your run and then see the map and judge your data and speed and everything afterwards on your phone. So I think that's where it fits. I think it's a very, very small niche, but I think for that little chunk of users who want that kind of watch, I think it fits really, really well.
And I suppose the big question is, will you carry on wearing it, or are you happy when they come and pick it up again?
I mean, I do miss a lot of the fitness tracking features that come with other watches, if I'm honest, because I don't just run. I'm not a pure runner. So I've got my Apple Watch back on now because I track my HI, my high intensity interval kettlebell workouts, for instance, with my Apple Watch. But yeah, I think if they added more in terms of workouts, like I said earlier, I think it would be something that would be really, really difficult to give up. Yeah.
And do you think that's possible? Is it from a software perspective, would that be possible for them to add that? Or do you think there's a limitation there?
I can see it being possible. The only difficulty they have is if you look around the bezel and the design and the labels on the watch, it says run on the button. So it literally, it tells you what that physical button is for, and that's its job, to track your run. So they might be able to change the software, but obviously they can't change the physical labels without bringing out a newer model, I don't think.
Well, that's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. Until next time, pip pip.